Development, and we'll start by putting a work session on Senate Bill 151. Janet, you want to update us, and then we'll have some interesting amendment propositions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 151 started out as a simple bill to extend the sunset on the Enterprise Zone program for the entire state program until 2021. Otherwise, it would terminate on June 30th, 2009. And, Mr. Chair, the bill does have a subsequent referral to the Finance and Revenue Committee. You have distributed just yesterday and then and another set of amendments this morning. Amendments, the Dash 1 amendments, were part of the committee discussion, came out of the committee discussion. They would extend the sunset instead of to 2021 to 2013 and add a requirement for an evaluation of the Oregon Enterprise Zone program and a report to the next legislature. It includes in the evaluation a cost-benefit analysis on the state and local economy and services and the degree to which the incentive is affecting investment and employment in particular Oregon zones. The Dash 2 amendments are Senator George's amendments, and he probably will want to speak to them. They have a different sunset date of 2021, but they have a method of estimating both the state revenues from employees' income taxes and from the business income taxes in the enterprise zones, and estimating those amounts and redistributing that instead of to the state general fund to some of the local taxing districts. And the Dash 3 amendment, Senator Walker is here to speak to. She had a separate Senate bill, and those Dash 3 amendments have a list of things beginning on page 3 that a business would have to show to get the exemptions under the Enterprise Zone program related to employee work and other items.
Okay. Thank you very much. So just to recap, so the Dash 1 reflects, I had asked for those, reflects our previous discussion about reeling back the sunset date, putting an accountability piece in. So that effort. I know Senator George has talked to a member of the committee about some of his ideas that are at least started in the Dash 2s, and when he gets here, we'll ask him to talk about those. And then the Dash 3s have come to us from Senator Walker. So, Senator Walker, if you want to come forward and discuss your Dash 3 amendment.
Okay, I'll bring my guest with us.
Thank you, Mr. Welcome. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7, and I appreciate your indulgence. There's a lot of bills flying around the building, and we just got wind of Senate Bill 151 yesterday, and if I had known about it earlier, I would have been here to testify at a public hearing. So you were gracious enough to allow me to draft Senate Bill 783 as the Dash 3 amendment to this bill, and I'll have Patrick Smith from Eugene speak to the Dash 3, which is really 783. And, you know, Mr. Chair, I'm just going to be quite frank. If I could obliterate enterprise zones from the statutes, I would. I hate them with every fiber of my being because there is no accountability at all for any of this money that we give away. No one ever tracks job production. No one ever tracks whether we got any cost-benefit ratios. And in fact, if you look at, I know you saw this report that the special districts prepared, and some could say it's somewhat biased because the special districts get cheated out of a lot of money, as do counties and cities. But in the appendices, in Appendix C, is a sample of the report that the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department puts together that shows what these enterprise zones have done. And this is the lamest thing I've ever seen in my life. It doesn't tell me anything about how many jobs were created or what the cost-benefit analysis is. I just I'm just appalled that we continue to give away taxpayer money without asking for anything in return showing the value for that money. So, since I can't obliterate these things, they've been in the code since for 20 years now. We have 55 of them. We're actually authorized to do up to 59, and I got waylaid into voting for another one last session because of the Murphy Plywood Mill in Roseburg. We gave them a special exemption, so I had to vote for one of those darn things. But, Mr. Chair, I just think it's, if we're going to give away money like this, we need accountability. I have another bill in Senator Deckert's Finance and Revenue Committee, Senate Bill 518. I call it the Corporate Accountability and Tax Expenditure Act, and I stole that bill from Illinois. And that's what I'm talking about. And you'll get a chance to learn about that when we have a hearing on it on March 21st. And it's showing accountability for how these tax dollars are spent. That's all I ask. If we want to give the people's money away, let's just get some accountability for it. So I'm going to have Mr. Smith, who's from one of the trade unions in Eugene, talk about Senate Bill 783, your Dash 3 amendment, and the Building Oregon Responsibly Code. That they work very hard with the city of Eugene to change their requirements for their enterprise zones. As you know, there's only two requirements to get enterprise zone money. You have to invest at least $50,000 in a building or major equipment, and you have to increase your employment by 10%. That's it. That's absolutely it. It doesn't have to be employment with living wage jobs or employment with health care or anything else. That's it. Cities and counties are free to expand upon those two requirements, and Eugene is one of them that recently did that through the good work of Mr. Smith and some of his fellow union members. So I'm going to, at this time, if you don't mind, turn it over to Patrick Smith.
Well, just before we do, thank you, Senator. And certainly if anybody is capable of obliterating thing. You're very good at that. So I'm sure there's a lot of people in the room that are happy that you know you, it won't, that you aren't going to go after to obliterate at the moment. However, on a serious note, I mean, your points regarding the analysis is very critical, and we've had that discussion as why we still have this bill before us. In terms of how do we evaluate the effectiveness, the cost benefit analysis, and and if you look at, you know, at the dash one, it gets to that is to, you know, to employ an expert out there to look at cost benefit analysis is, because that is an issue that we are, like you, concerned about. So, and we're continuing to talk about that. So.
And Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. The program's been around for 20 darn years and no one's ever done that before. And I'm just amazed the way we have this, you know, I sometimes I feel like blowing up a blank check and bringing it with me on a cardboard, piece of cardboard every time I come to a committee that has yet one more giveaway. And, you know, we've seen our fair share of that in Eugene and Springfield. We gave lots of money away to Sony. And then Sony laid off a bunch of workers, hired some back at lower wages, and then they left. We gave money to Symantec, downtown Eugene, so gave them a bunch of money to build a parking garage and do all kinds of things. Well, when the money ran out in Eugene, of course, they say it's because they outgrew the space, but they went to Springfield where they got more tax breaks. It's like everybody's chasing the tax break here. And, you know, it's you and I, and it's local districts, it's counties. Ever since Measure 5 and Measure 50 now, there is a direct hit for every local community and a loss of revenue. And you know who's picking up the tab? It's all of us up here who have to vote to put more state money into these programs because they're not picking up the money at the local space. So I'm just, that's why I just shiver when I see more things that have tax breaks. And you're right, I'm good at obliterating things. And I believe, you know, Ed Whitelaw is a U of O professor, and he's one of the Northwest leading economists. And he said in an article in Eugene Weekly, which, you know, I actually think the Weekly does some really good things, but he says, study after study has shown that corporate incentives do little to improve local economies. I can give you chapter and verse. And Sony was a classic mistake. We've known that incentives don't work for decades, yet people keep getting suckered into it. It's a chronic, persistent disease that we've contracted here, and it's just mindless. I couldn't have said it better. So with that,
and you did,
Mr.
Yes.
Chair. Thank you. Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I have to, though, report one success, please.
Please.
Okay. And that's in Clackamas County, and where the Clackamas Town Center is. And when that area was struggling, and there were a lot of older vacant buildings, and they had the former Costco building off of Highway 24, rents were 30% below the market value on a commercial submarket and analysis of the Milwaukee area. There were closures of the Pendleton Woolen Mill and York International, Murphy Plywood, and the median incomes were way below $4,500. But that area has turned out to be a success, and it was truly an enterprise zone where now I don't have the stats right in front of me here, but this report came from Clackamas County from their public and government relations. And so I think I agree with you totally. There needs to be some accountability here, mm-hmm. but it can work. And I know that we have an enterprise zone now in the Gresham area, and by gum, I'm going to be watching it very closely because I don't want to have it obliterated at this point in time.
Okay, so before let's go on to our testimony. Thank you, Senator. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thanks for giving me a chance to speak. My name is Patrick Smith. I'm here today to speak to you as a member of Oregon's construction community and a Lane County resident for the last 45 years. I agree with you. It is about accountability and return to the community, and that's why I have a lot of passion in this particular issue. I believe that before this committee considers SB 151, it is essential for you to seriously consider the contents of SB 783, and this is why. This is my concern that is shared by local construction communities around this state, believe me. Currently, the accountability, the living wage jobs with benefits, and the return to the community promised by corporations and businesses locating in enterprise zones only begins after the construction phase is completed. We're ignoring a huge sector of our community taxpayers at every level. We're construction workers. It's what we do full time. I appeal to this committee to consider whether this is a comprehensive and fair partnership. I think we can and should do more, and SB 783 addresses these concerns. The construction jobs created within our enterprise zone should not be excluded from the job creation criteria for qualifying for economic relief, which is currently the situation. Building our communities responsibly is every bit as important as establishing living wage jobs with benefits after companies in our enterprise zones open for business. The construction workers performing work within our communities and state enterprise zones are our friends, neighbors, and fellow taxpayers. By incorporating the language from SB 783 into SB 151, this committee will ensure that the partnership between business entities locating in our enterprise zones and the communities that they exist in will begin with the onset of the construction phase. Our state's construction workers have earned and deserve their fair share of the returns to the community that the enterprise zone job creation criteria within SB 151 is working towards, guaranteeing for the future of Oregon responsible growth.
So why don't you give me a synopsis of what the amendment does?
Well, in bold here, this was generated out of something that I authored years ago called Build Oregon Responsibly, and you can see it in bold on page 3.
Right.
It basically describes what the construction community considers a responsible contractor. And by incorporating this responsible bidder or contractor language into their criteria, you begin to see the returns to the community that the rest of this bill is trying to ensure once the corporation or business entity is open for business. So we're essentially trying to include the construction phase in the accountability and part of the promise that these corporations and businesses are making to the communities and the taxpayers of Oregon.
Now, Senator Walker, did you say in discussing this prior to committee that either this language or something similar has been incorporated in an enterprise zone in Eugene, or?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Smith can speak to that. He spearheaded that.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's part of the qualifying criteria for economic incentives in the Eugene Enterprise Zone. I want to be careful there because I've approached the county too, but the City of Eugene Enterprise Zone, currently it is part of the qualifying criteria. We went through the whole process. Of course, it was deemed to be completely legal and the right thing to do. So currently, if an entity is applying for economic relief in the City of Eugene and their enterprise zones, they need to commit to that criteria to receive the full economic relief.
And Mr. Chair, this came up because we have another major employer in Eugene, Hynix, and they were sucking off millions in tax breaks, to put it quite bluntly, and it was taking money out of the local schools and whatnot, so they worked very hard, and in re-upping Hynix's tax breaks, they had to agree to some certain things. One of them was to put more money back into local schools, and the other one is they now have to comply with this Building Oregon Responsibly language as well. So, it took a long while for the City of Eugene. They had to change mayors to do it, to get it done. Ashland, I believe, is the only other community in the state that has any other requirements to the enterprise zone besides these two basic requirements under the state law. And some will argue, well, that's the way it should be. It should be simple and let communities do different grandiose things if they wish. But I see it as the other way around.
And does this language then replicate what the Eugene enterprise zone that you're referring to, or is...
Yeah, I would say so. I can't say it's identical, but it's generated out of the same document, Build Oregon Responsibly document. So without them in front of me, I would say that it's almost exact.
Well, one thing, and I'll ask the committee members have some questions in a second here, because this obviously is pretty extensive, and a lot of people in the room probably haven't seen it, so we are going to give you an opportunity to see this. We'll bring this bill back one more time and make a decision before we move it on, but I want to make sure that anybody in the room has an opportunity to see this -3 and give some thought to that when we bring back again, because I know Senator George is still working on his amendment. I know this is all fresh to everybody here in the dais, but do you have any questions at the moment of Mr. Smith and his amendment or an approach?
Yes.
Senator Moss-Anderson?
Have you found in the Eugene area, and I am very interested, that it is going to be, when I'm looking at all of the requirements, is it going to narrow it to the certain kinds of industries or certain industries? I'm trying to look here. It has to pay a livable wage job. I mean, that makes sense. Promotes the use of local vendor suppliers and other contractors. I really like my cities to take a look,
yeah.
Or at least my city to take a look at this to see how it would impact. But you didn't see a narrowing. This doesn't narrow necessarily.
No, I don't see it as narrowing anything at all. It just is an attempt to provide the same accountability in return to the taxpayers that you're currently describing in your enterprise zone qualifying criteria. It's just including the construction phase. Right now, I'd see it as just an injustice that the construction workers in our communities that are paying in those taxes, that are providing the money for these entities, for the incentives for these entities to locate into our communities, which is a good thing. We're just being eliminated. So really, I see this language is a way to create some accountability and some return to the local community from the onset of the project, not just after the company opens their doors for business.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Moss-Anderson, you'll also note that part of the Building Oregon Responsibly language includes a provision that you do not hire workers who are in this country undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're here in violation of federal immigration laws, you can't be employed on any of these projects.
And if I could, that it's been a huge problem with Hynix in the last couple of years. They really have not fulfilled their promises.
They often would bring, Mr. Chair, they would bring workers over on vacation visas and have them work and then go back. And it would be a series of them coming over on vacation visas. And I might add also that Hynix, after they got all these millions of dollars in tax breaks, they turned around and sued the county for their property valuation being too high, and they got, I believe, $2 million back. I thought that
good
was
business
really
plan,
kick in the pants. So, Mr. Chair, I want to leave you with one final quote, if I could, because I feel the questions have wound down. This quote is from Paul O'Neill, who was former CEO of Alcoa and Treasury Secretary, and it's from 2001. As a businessman, I never made an investment decision based on the tax code. If you are giving money away, I will take it. If you want to give me inducements for something I am going to do anyway, I will take it. That's my point. Most of the time, they'll take the money if you give it to them, but they'll do it anyway. So if we're going to give this money away, let's start asking some more detailed questions about it, because quite frankly, I'm tired of my local budgets being voted down, and I'm tired of people telling me that we're not tightening our belts and we're having to underfund social services and education in this state. And the first place we need to start looking is where we're handing out the money on all these darn tax breaks. So I look forward to bringing Senate Bill 518 to Senator Deckard's committee, where we can talk about exposure and disclosure of all of those tax breaks.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President, any questions?
Just one. Yeah. I believe Hynix is the largest private sector employer in Lane County. I could be wrong because I'm not from Lane County, but that was my understanding.
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckard, they may be, I don't know, they are one of the largest employers we now have.
Sacred Heart's pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say with the new hospital, it's probably going to be a toss-up. It's a tough call between those two. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And because of the complexity of this, we are going to allow people to look at it and provide comments, as I'm sure they will do as they wander through our offices with their comments.
All right. Thank you very much. Courtesy.
Now I'd like to turn over to Senator George, who has arrived since we started, who has the Dash 2 and continuing to work on that. And if you could give us an overview of your amendment, and that would be helpful for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After our initial hearing, these are some rough draft amendments. They need quite a bit of work if we're going to pursue this direction. But I think I visited with everybody on the committee about a concept I had. The testimony that was for the committee talked about the idea that if not but for these tax benefits, a lot of these companies wouldn't locate here, wouldn't be here. And I was fairly moved by that testimony because I think it's an accurate reflection of the situation. At the same time, it impacted me on how the special districts and local districts, school districts, local governments were affected by this. In essence, the state has a policy of trying to draw these companies into our area, and yet we're asking the local governments to make all the sacrifices. So I met with most of the interested parties about a concept I had, and you may remember back a few sessions ago, there was an attempt to build a baseball stadium in Portland, capture the revenue from the players, and then go back to feed the bonds. And what I did is I used that logic, is that what we want to do is we want to capture the revenues coming from the enterprise zones, and which wouldn't exist if it were not for the enterprise zones, capture some of that revenue and share it back with the local jurisdictions. And that's what the Dash 2s are attempting to get at. So what would happen is that if you look at how the framework of these amendments are drafted, and understand I'm looking at this to be more prospective. There's some drafting problems with it. The Department of Revenue has pointed out to me. We just got these out of Legislative Council, so there's quite a great deal of work. But in essence, what would happen is that once we identify the enterprise zone, the Department of Revenue would estimate the income taxes coming from the employees and from the businesses themselves that are contained in the enterprise zones. Those dollars would go to an enterprise income tax fund at the state treasury. Under the way it's drafted right now, the Economic Development Department would distribute these funds. I'm envisioning more the Department of Revenue would do so. And basically what happened is that those funds, those income tax funds that were brought into the state that otherwise wouldn't exist if it were not for the enterprise zones, that would be distributed back to local districts, school districts, education service district, community college districts, cities, counties, and then out to counties that are economically distressed. in my conversations with the Department of Economic Development, they are viewing it maybe we need to have some kind of profit share with the state, that the state should keep some of those funds. But it's an idea to sort of bring everybody in and vest every party in the idea of economic development in these zones. Right now there's a great deal of obviously back and forth about who gets what benefit. I think this type of concept may be something we could do that would bring everybody together, and we basically profit share all the way around with the benefits. It's just a concept I have out there. I've discussed it with most folks, and I think if anybody really has an objection to it, I'm not opposed to moving the bill as originally drafted right through. But this is a way that we could possibly approach this to bring everybody together in some kind of, and I'm willing to spend some time working on it. I don't want to delay the activities of this committee, and I'm willing to put some time in to try to bring the parties together some more. But at this time, this is just a concept. I'd just like to get some feedback from the committee about the direction of whether or not they think this is a worthy venture.
Okay, thank you, Senator. We'll get a few comments. Comments, first of all, from the committee for Senator George conceptually here. I know he's still kind of wanting to get a sense from the committee in terms of the effort that he may expend on this. And does anybody have any particular thoughts about the approach that Senator George is looking at?
Oh, Mr. Chair?
Senator Marcy.
I'm not quite sure how the monies are distributed right now and how... I know that the breaks are given, so I'm not quite sure the breaks that are given. Where's
currently what happens is this is a state effort to try to bring businesses to the state of Oregon, but the way our tax system is structured right now is that basically only the local governments can give these tax breaks. So they're giving up, basically local governments are giving up all the tax breaks to try to draw these businesses to their community. The business locates, and the state is the sole beneficiary because it gets the income taxes. So we have local governments giving all the breaks and the state getting all the money, but the state wouldn't get that money if it were not for the local tax breaks. And so it's sort of the discussion we had of the if not but for the enterprise zone, the state wouldn't get the revenue. So what I'm trying to do is capture that revenue that wouldn't exist otherwise and cost share it back to our, or benefit share it back to our local partners. And that way, special districts, school districts, and some of the other local districts who have been hurt, in essence, by the enterprise zones or perceived as being hurt by the enterprise zones would be the beneficiaries of the enterprise zones just like the state. Shouldn't have a revenue impact because if it was not for the enterprise zone, the state wouldn't have the revenue if we made it just prospectively.
How many million, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Do you know about how many millions of dollars this is from all 55?
Well,
enterprise zones.
The way I envisioned it, and the reason I don't have the answer to that question, but the way I envisioned it would just be prospective. So it would be depends on what we go forward in the future. But if the testimony is accurate that we wouldn't have these businesses if it were not for the enterprise zone, then there wouldn't be any revenue to have at the state level. I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I think the state's position is that there may be some middle ground here where we try to, the state gets to keep a certain percentage of the money and the locals get divvied up some dough. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make everybody a partner in this rather than having a disagreement like we've had in front of this committee on this issue.
Mm-hmm. I have one question, Senator George. I was wondering, and I understand what you say, you're going to continue to work in the revenue sharing idea. And that, I guess, would be how one would or who would be responsible for determining that, you know, the but-for part. I guess one could make a case that you could actually incent more enterprise zone. Some districts may do more enterprise zone activity because they see the fact that they're going to get the state income tax that they wouldn't normally get, and so they'll take more chances and spend state money on doing these things and actually creating, making other enterprise zone investments they might not otherwise make. Because they're going to be getting revenue they wouldn't otherwise get to help support that and actually expand the utilization of this without as much scrutiny. Now that's a counterpoint question, not necessarily my belief, but I'm curious as to what you how would respond to that, because that would be.
I think that was the department's concern, and maybe we get the department up here to
argue.
Want to talk about it. But the idea, he rolled his eyes at me. Sorry about that, Art. But yeah,
probably when you talk about department, probably should have the Department of Revenue come up as well.
Yeah,
Art and the Department of Revenue. Who's from the department here today? Mm-hmm. I saw somebody here from the department.
But I think the concept is that there may be
Poor
some
job.
Of the testimony said that there's an inherent unknown, which is what percentage of these what percentage of these businesses would be here even without the enterprise zone. So we don't know what that is.
Well, first of all, so we'll have our talk on that. I want to make one comment, though. First of all, I really appreciate, Senator George, you working on this. I mean, it's the kind of, whether we move forward or not, it's the kind of the creative thing that we like to look at as we look at these issues and be able to vent those. So I do appreciate that. Art, your perspective on at least the concept, not just language, because Senator George has already said the language is not exactly right.
No, thank you, Chair Metzger, Senator George. Again, Arthur Fish, for the record, with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. We've had a look at the Dash 2s, and, you know, yeah, there is some technical administrative. I've developed some notes, and we can share more with you on this, and I do want to share with the committee something I mentioned last time, which is for the fun of it, which I think you'll like, because it will kind of give you some clarity on some of these questions. But I think the point you were raising goes to sort of my last thought, which is, okay, you sort of take away, you know, you sort of make this a less of a gambit for the local areas. You know, they can think, well, you know, we can get enterprise zones and, you know, we'll be kind of backfilled in some ways. And, you know, that might be a really good idea. But how is that going to change people's local motivations? And so, I mean, a lot of areas that maybe don't want an enterprise zone now would jump at it. And maybe the districts would be advocates and proponents for the opportunity to, you know, get in these investments, but also, you know, keep themselves rather whole as far as property taxes. You know, give or take all the complexities about how much there is state revenue from a given project versus how much it affects property taxes. So, I mean, that's my only thought is that, yeah, I mean, it's going to change people's calculus at a local level as far as how the governments view the purpose and trade-offs of getting an enterprise zone.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phelps with the Department of Revenue. I was listening for a specific question.
I was curious just the revenues. The question that I posed to Senator George, I mean, you collect the revenue. I mean, but I was looking for your, if you had a particular perspective on how the Department of Revenue might view the kind of methodology in which the state revenue would go, be calculated, et cetera, and then how that would be calculated, whether that would be a responsibility you think might be thrown upon you and your department, and how you might figure that, and just any of your professional expertise in terms of how that does, as Art says, to the incentives, even though that's not your particular department, it is your revenue. So,
yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. We have, I just saw this for the first time this morning, we've identified a few administrative issues. And some of those involve the confidentiality of the tax itself. We hold that very high in regard. And so there are some issues about identifying individual business firms operating within a zone and taking that money. And to the extent there are only one or two initially maybe in a zone, there might be some issues with confidentiality about identifying who's paying what tax and how much that tax might be. There are also, secondly, some issues around capturing the income related to the business. There appears to be in the amendment, a link between the employee, for example, and the business firm operating in the enterprise zone. But the taxes themselves that we would then identify and segregate and set aside for this fund may be from other sources. They may be capital gains income from investments on the side or self-employment income. Or they may be income from a spouse that's unconnected or disconnected with the, you know, associated work at the business firm. So there would be some administrative issues trying to identify if we were supposed to. The way I read the Dash 2s, or the way we've read it, is that it would be from any source, not just from that business firm. So that would be a little easier to administer, although just be advised that there would be no direct link in those instances.
Okay.
And thirdly, there's some timing issues with the property tax system being in a July 1st start, sort of, and the income tax, personal and corporate, being on a calendar year, more fiscal year start. So applying the revenues that are generated from this income and corporate tax to a specific taxes foregone for the property tax exemption, we'd have to link that up. So on the administrative side for counties, there's also some issues in terms of the distribution, because not all districts are affected, only those that levy property taxes, and the distribution would have to work differently than is currently done. and that can be overcome. And finally, the other issue for them is that currently they calculate the taxes less the exemption. So there's no final calculation done on the property taxes themselves because it's not necessary. So an additional iteration would have to be made of the calculation of the property taxes. And into that, you know, a calculation comes measure 5 and the compression issue. So that would absolutely be essential in order to capture the actual dash 2 requirement that it be those revenues that were lost. So all of that is just administrative tax things that the Revenue Committee and Senator Deckett love to deal with. So
yeah. Well, we're just trying to decide just, you know, how much complexity you would like to send on to the good senator.
Chair Metzger, with your permission, I just comment. John and I are more property tax people, and I mean, he alluded to some of the issues that, you know, I mean, you really have to get the county assessors involved, and because, you know, they're the ones that crunch these numbers, and there's a lot of complexity as far as levies versus permanent rates and Measure 5 versus 50. But at the income tax side, you know, I mean, just trying to track those things and link them is a pretty challenging issue. And one of the things we were talking with Senator George was also there might be, you know, some sort of, you know, simple ways or better ways to just do this that isn't exact, but it gets at something. And I would just also note, just in terms of sort of technical methods, there's a bill that Senator Deckert has sponsored that kind of does the same thing respective to strategic investment program type projects. And I think, to its credit, it kind of calls out and makes at least, it only gets at the withholding, the personal income taxes. But it sort of separates out some of the withholdings directly from the business as they're paying the withholding. And so that would create perhaps a better mechanism. So there's, you know, when you get down to the mechanisms to make this perhaps easier and less fraught with controversy for the Department of Revenue, that's something I would perhaps look at.
Okay. Thank you for that. Any other questions, Ms. Cass?
Okay.
Senator George.
The memo that I got from the Department of Revenue was exactly kind of the things I was talking about. Those seem like things we can overcome, and I completely would open that up. I guess my question to all of you is that I'm willing to spend some time trying to come up with a proposal. However, I don't really want to pursue something that we don't have some general consensus on. And obviously, Senator Deckert would have to decide. We'd probably go to Revenue after this, whether you wanted to deal with this either. And again, it's just an idea about trying to bring some folks together. So I'm really open, but I'd be willing to spend some personal time to try to bring everybody together to some kind of consensus. But I don't want to chase something that if it's not a useful endeavor.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. So what we're going to do with this at the moment, I think on the Dash 1 amendment, which is the contracting the sunset, is something I definitely want to do and narrow that so we can review. I'd like to have members look at the language that the Legislative Council did on the cost-benefit analysis and provide some feedback as to that gets to some of the issues that Senator Walker and others have pointed out. Start looking at this program more objectively before the next sunset, whatever that may be, or if there's any suggestions on how that language may be different. I'd like to have members look at the Dash 2 amendments that Senator George has with that discussion and provide feedback to him, and that would be those in the audience and those in TV land who would like to provide input for Senator George so he can decide what his threshold for working on that was. And I do appreciate him thinking about that. And then the Dash 3 amendment that Senator Walker and Mr. Smith have, I want members who have vested interest in this issue to provide meaningful feedback to Senator Walker, who will provide it to us. Because we will seriously look at her amendment as well, so don't expect there'll be a lot of time to do that in the committee, so I would encourage you to do that before we bring this back. And then my goal would be next week to decide what direction we're going to take and move this on so that Senator Deckert then can do the fiscal analysis of the policy that we've created and give him time to adequately address that. So with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 151, and we'll look for that next week and encourage people to provide their feedback. Do we have? Okay. All right. Let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 470. Janet.
Chair and members, Senate Bill 470 is the bill that came from the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. You had a hearing on it on February 14th. It would require the OECDD to establish a grant program to promote expanding a self-sustaining internet exchange to all areas of the state, as well as improving internet capacity. The program would allocate, or excuse me, the bill would allocate $1 million to the department for the program beginning at the beginning of the next biennium. You have, the committee did discuss wanting some additional specificity, and there was concern about competition with the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
The Dash 1 amendments add more specific language regarding the purpose and restrictions on the grant program. There is a limit on individual grants to $150,000, and it would require public bodies to partner with the for-profit company to apply for a grant. And it finally requires a report from OECDD to the legislature. Mr. Chair, at your place is written testimony. Dr. Ed Parker was the person who testified in February. He was not able to come today. There is testimony as to the amendments and support for the amendments from Dr. Parker. And I believe there's also a letter at your place from Eugene, City of Eugene, in support of Senate Bill 470 that we didn't have at the hearing.
Okay. And who do we have to testify on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, there may be people we have questions of, but we don't have a sign-up out, and we don't have anyone to testify.
Okay. Well, before
that does
we
have a substantive reason.
Yes, yes, that's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Mars-Anders, you're on the bill, so.
Yeah. Regarding the amendment, and I apologize for not looking at it more carefully, but from what the summary is, with major significant internet exchanges, I truly believe need to be in cooperation with the private sector also. And if this narrows it, which and opens it up to them, then I am very open to that. But that's me speaking and not necessarily anyone else who's a opponent or a proponent of this bill.
Okay. And Mr. Parker's comments address the questions that we brought. We had questions about making sure that we didn't have public entities actually competing. You know, they could partner in terms of providing access but not competing for facilities, which is incorporated in the Dash 1. Then the limitation on the grant, I think, is what, $150,000, which is also in the Dash 1 amendment. First of all, anybody on the committee have any comments about the Dash 1 itself, or if that addresses some of the questions that we have?
It would be nice.
I was going to say, is there anybody in the audience who'd like to comment on the Dash 1 amendments?
I'd like Mr. Dewey's comments.
Yes.
I wouldn't like Mr. Dewey's comments.
That's true. I'd rather have
the docs. I just found out
I'd rather have
in the
Jimmy's
first round,
comments.
Second round.
Welcome, Mr. Dewey. You've been out getting some sunshine, or your cheeks are very red at the moment.
Beautiful, beautiful day. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mike Dewey, representing the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association, trade association of Oregon cable companies that are in a diverse telecommunications environment. I think the amendments have gone a long ways in dealing with our concerns, and if you will, we were somewhat kind of lukewarm opposed to the bill. We appreciate that Dr. Parker has looked at our viewpoint in terms of kind of the competition issue that the good senator brought up. The only issue that I would have, and you're not going to be able to deal with this, is the a for-profit can be established in some ways to look like a non-profit. I don't think that's necessarily the intent of the bill, but we're neutral at this point in time on this piece of legislation. We do believe there ought to be more facilities located in Oregon, more broadband facilities, and our companies are doing that. They're making tremendous investments, and because there's a lack on the Oregon coast, those investments are being made also privately. And we think it's important to have a conversation between municipalities, the Telecom Coordinating Council, and private entities to see if there are opportunities to work on joint projects. And so this is, if you will, a first step in doing that. So at this stage, Mr. Chair, we would be neutral on this piece of legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Dewey. Questions for Mr. Dewey? Thank you. Anybody else? Senator George.
So I want to make sure you've moved from lukewarm against to just clearly neutral. Is that just what I'm making here with these amendments?
Clearly neutral.
Okay, I just want to make sure I understood the testimony.
Yes.
Yes, it has a referral to ways and means. Thank you. Anybody else wish to testify on 470-1? Okay, this bill has a referral to Ways and Means, and I would ask that we send it down there and let them work on that further, and Senator Anderson, Senator Nelson. So we're in a work session, and we have a dash one, if we can have it.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 470.
Senator Starr has moved the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 470. Discussion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I'm not a big fan of this bill. I'm going to vote against it. I think the amendments make it better, but I'm concerned about really Section 2 of the bill, where the money is coming from. I think that this is a part of the world where there's lots of dollars that are being invested to bring broadband access to the world. And I just don't think we need to use public resources to do this. I think there's private money out there to do it. So I'll support amending it, but I'm not going to support the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Any objections to the amendment? Okay. So ordered. Senator Mona Sanderson, you want to make a motion?
I move that Senate Bill 470 as amended be referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
What are your recommendation on it?
No recommendation.
Oh, okay. Senator Mona Sanderson has moved Senate Bill 470 to the Ways and Means Committee without recommendation. Any further discussion? Okay, please take the roll.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Mona Sanderson?
Aye.
Senator Deckard?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Chair Metzger?
Aye. Senate Bill 470 had received constitutional majority, is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Well, that discussion will continue. Now, Janet, where are we with 150 at the moment? I know we've been kind of stalling for this.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 150.
I'll open up work session and Senate Bill 150.
Has a subsequent referral to the to the Ways and Means Committee as well. This is a bill that was heard on the 17th of January and would establish a mezzanine financing fund within the state treasury for financing certain loans to Oregon businesses. There was a discussion at that meeting, and the dash one amendments did not come from that discussion. They came from the Department of Economic and Community Development. They would clarify that the nature of the fund that it would be a public-private partnership arrangement, and it gets away from direct financing. And it also deletes that there was a whole section that created a separate multi-bank account, and that whole section and reference to the multi-bank account is determined unnecessary, and it's deleted. This bill was a bill at the request of the Economic and Community Development Department, and Mike Salzgiver is here. There are additional amendments that we may be able to get out of council by the end of the meeting, but they were not available. So you have the dash one.
I have to be within the next
hot
10
and warm
minutes.
Amendments. Mr. Salzgiver, welcome. And back up.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Salzgiver, Deputy Director, OECDD. In as much as I'm still learning quick and to do my personal accounting, I'm going to turn this over to our business finance manager, if I could, to have him answer any questions you may have or to explain the department's views on the amendments that are before you.
Chair Metzger, committee, my name is John Wargren, finance manager for Oregon Economic Community Development. I have some Hand and Gross versions of, if you'd like me to bring those forward, Janet?
Yeah, well, go ahead. And these are modifications to the Dash 1?
Correct.
Okay.
They're really primarily refinements to take into consideration, for example, that we do loan guarantees for banks in addition to working with businesses, and just to clarify points like that so that the language is more precise.
Well, as you're handing those out, you know, the committee, I know this has been 2 months, is one of the first bills we heard, had a couple of concerns, one of which was the asking the question, why would we need a mezzanine financing program? I know it's only $1 million. I know it came out of an existing fund. But the question is, why would we want to lend money to a business that the private sector, for whatever reason, decided they wouldn't lend money to? That was one of the questions that we had, and as to you know, the viability of the program based on that. And so I'd like to have your comments put in that context and how those either answer that question directly or how you think the amendments help clarify that better.
Can I add two to that?
Yes.
So we get them all?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If also, John, the issue that I have is that we have set up a process for helping small companies, startups, whether it's the Oregon Investment Fund, which is $100 million to invest in these type of ventures. We have tax credits, two pretty decent and well-structured tax credits, and then we have the whole Innovation Council, which is specifically designed, and I understand this idea was vetted and just had no recommendation from the Innovation Council, who are our state's experts on these type of questions of helping incubate small startups. And so for me, what we were trying to do as a state is simplify, have a few very good vehicles to deal with this valley of death issue. I think we've achieved it. And then we see this idea, and part of me is ask the question, where did this come from? And $1 million is not much, but it's $1 million. And why? And why isn't it part of the simplified, coordinated strategy on the tax and Oregon Investments Fund side to really deal with this issue?
Chair Metzger, Senator Deckert, excellent questions. And I'll sort of set the stage and then turn it over to John to talk about the detail level of it. He and his team have been the most involved in the customer survey work, the interaction with the private lenders that led to this proposal coming forward. First and foremost, this is not intended to be venture capital money. This is, again, targeted at businesses where there is a lending risk that banks might not otherwise make, that with the state's contribution, they would take a second look at. Secondly, we did bring this to the Innovation Council. That was one of the earliest requests I made of the finance team, was to vet it through that council. As you know, Senator, there are a number of venture capitalists that are active in that process, and they were curious about whether this was venture capital money that we were looking at or whether it was some other type of lending. Once we helped them understand that this was not VC, they simply took note of it and passed and didn't choose, given the scope of the Oregon Inc.'s package, they chose not to take it up and passed it forward, similar to what you did with 470 without recommendation. They just said, fine, thank you for bringing it here. Third, I would point out that John and his team have gone through a fairly significant part of our continuous improvement process in the department is to continuously be in touch with our customers and do direct contact work, survey work, and other things to find out areas where we can be more helpful, improve our systems, and other things. And this concept emerged from that customer survey work as one of the top three things that the private lending community would like to see the department step forward more on. And so this concept was developed actually outside the Oregon Innovation Council process. It was a concept that we would have submitted for review and approval regardless of what Oregon Inc. did. So with that stage setting, I'll turn it over to John and ask him to go into the detail about how the concept came to be and what exactly the niche it would fill.
Thank you. Chair Metzger, Senator Decker, committee. As Mike mentioned, we did start with a survey last year, which we touched on when we had the hearing here last time. And it clearly was an area that where there was a gap that was pointed out by our business partners and banking partners as an area that that needed to be filled. We followed that with a study from our financial advisor to do sort of a national search on what kind of mezzanine royalty financing was done in other states. So with that input, we did make a presentation to Oregon Inc. and to their one of their subcommittees. We received positive comments, but they gave us encouragement, but we were sort of midstream in terms of really finding out more about this and trying to decide where we wanted to go with it. And we were not included in that package, and so we've sort of struck out on our own and thinking that there would be a range of possibilities from direct lending to public-private partnerships. We've narrowed that to the idea of public-private partnerships. At the last meeting, one of you asked, you know, why isn't the private sector doing this, or why aren't other people doing this? Why do we need to do it? And so we've had meetings, for example, with ShoreBank's non-bank nonprofit, and with Albina Bank is doing something similar. There are a number of folks that are seeing this gap and seeing the need to fill it, and they've also provided encouragement and offered to send letters or to speak on behalf of giving us the authority to do this so that they could participate with us to design a program. And so that's where we are in the process at this point. We've recommended a pilot that would allow us to develop that further and refine it, overseen by our director and also the commission, with setting up performance measures and doing all the things we need to do over the next short period of time so that we could make some wise investments and fill gaps that are truly there.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add one other thing. The $1 million that we're seeking authority for is not new money. We're asking for authority to divert part of the Oregon Business Development Fund, which we use primarily to provide loan loss reserve accounts or direct lending or granting to businesses, to just divert $1 million of that into this thing. That's I just want to make that clarification.
We now have the Dice Warm dash twos coming before us, and members have the hand gross in front of you. The one part I really like about this, and I really appreciate it, is the section one in which you've added credit enhancement to financial organizations, because that was one of the discussions we had, is rather than necessarily, even though that is still an option here, the way it's written, just going out and giving money based on whatever matrix of risk you want to assume, that to engage the private sector, if there's, you know, if you provide guarantees for loans or buy down 200 basis points of loans or whatever that type of enhancement might be to engage the private sector with those dollars, as opposed to just the I personally like, I mean, because it does get the private sector more involved in minimizing their risk, but still the opportunity to participate. That does that for me, and I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, one other thing, and I'll turn to John on this. One of the things I'm not sure we've done an adequate job yet of doing is defining the gap we're talking about. So, John, could you?
Mezzanine financing is defined here as that area between what bank lending will do and what a typical venture capital organization will do. It's debt financing. It's something that's just a little more a little more risky than what we do currently with our business finance programs, but doesn't get into the area of competing with venture capital, and that's not our intent to do that. The spin-off benefit of using debt financing rather than equity financing is for Oregon businesses, it's possible for those businesses to, they may not qualify for venture capital on the one hand. On the other hand, the exit strategy is not selling their business for the venture capital partner to obtain their return. They can keep their business, they can continue to grow it and stay in Oregon. And so we really see that as a benefit as well.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, one last thing. And the department, one of the reasons we were comfortable making the request to pursue this concept was because the department and our staff have done a very good job in managing the loan portfolios that we have in play right now, and our loss rate is substantially below what you would see in the private sector. So we already conservatively manage these, even though some of the risk that we're experiencing is higher. We work very closely with the lenders. We work very closely with the businesses to structure packages that tend to work and show results.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Committee members, does the Dash 2 amendment get to the issues that we talked about a couple of months ago?
Well, it appears to. Sometimes I don't, having just got them and not read it through, but I trust no one sees any opposition to it.
Okay. Okay. This goes to Ways and Means, by the way. So, and I know there's been discussions with the chair of Ways and Means on this, and I appreciate you making those rounds, and because that's important. So, we have a Dash 2.
Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 150.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 150. Discussion on the amendment?
And that does basically change.
It does the, you can see the brief, Senator Monsanderson, in the
which
synopsis.
One?
We just got the amendment. But the
Okay.
Which adds a, rather than necessarily financing just two businesses, could go to financial organizations to help enhance their participation. Points out that these are not ones that would be funded by risk capital, venture capitalists.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Do these go solely to traded sector firms, or could this go to a service industry company?
Chair Metzger, Senator Decker, the conversations that we've had with organizations, as I mentioned, like Shore Bank and Albina Bank, look at niches of this. And so one of the things that we're trying to discover is, even though we're very interested in creating jobs and promoting traded sector, and that's high on our list as an organization, we realize that there are partners out there that are also interested in that and have economic development focus, but they may have a slight difference. They may focus on a particular industry group, or urban versus rural, or vice versa. And so we're trying to figure out who wants to play in the full range of opportunities within Oregon. So traded sector definitely is our focus, and we hope to partner with those that where we would overlap and be able to work together.
So, yes, it would only go to traded sector.
I'd like to leave the door open just a little crack, but, yes, that's the primary focus.
So not only.
Not only.
Not only, but primarily.
And Mr. Chair, my general question would be, why is it in the interest of the state, even if it's making a loan, to make a loan to a business that otherwise would be there anyway, and we're just then getting into a competitive environment of someone's going to sell furniture, for example, or whatever, and then the state would be, if we keep that door open, then we're in effect saying, well, we want it to be these people who we're going to help these versus. And to me, that's just not sure. If I had $1 million, well, in this case, we do, or entrusted with $1 million, just not sure. That'd be the first emphasis I would have.
Chair Metzger, Senator Decker, just to maybe clarify for a moment, the kinds of investments that are done are those where, if it's done with royalty financing, for example, we're looking at not only doing a sort of getting repaid principal and interest for maybe a product expansion, but there would be a rapid growth opportunity in sales, so that royalties from those sales would go to help repay the loan in a fairly short period of time. And it's where there's real opportunity for upside on maybe an established company in the traded sector that has a new product that is not bankable yet, but they need to finish getting it ready to take to market or to demonstrate those sales so that they can then go to a bank and get financing to take it out or expand it. So we're looking for that gap where it's not really bankable, but there's some tremendous upside with focus on traded sector.
Other questions? Senator George.
I could. I think what Senator Deckert was trying to get at is we don't want to be in the business of picking winners and losers, and that was a big part of our conversation, if I understood what you were saying correctly. And I guess in a few, I'm supportive of the legislation, but in the future as we go forward, I just don't want to have firms come in and say, I had a business and the state picked those guys to beat me up. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't want to be here in a situation someday where somebody's business didn't grow because we picked a winner in that situation, and then that would be my biggest concern. And I don't know if that was follow what Senator Deckert was saying, but that's my concern about these types of pieces of legislation. And so when you guys go forward, if you would, just make sure we're not in those kind of situations where we're going to be hearing from people who are damaged by this. By this type of legislation.
Chairman Metzger, Senator George, I understand what you're saying, and I think the kinds of companies that have talked to us already that we haven't been able to help were companies that were introducing new products, new product lines in Oregon. Maybe they had taken it to the point where they've developed the concept and they've, you know, there's a separate patent or something that they've got on the company on the product, and they need to $100,000 or $300,000 or $400,000, where we would put up $100,000, somebody else would put up $300,000 to get them to that next stage where they could really generate the sales. And I can't think of an example where someone has talked to us where there's a direct competitor. It's usually a new idea, a new concept.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have a motion for the dash two. Any objections?
Dash two.
Yeah. Yes.
I'll just be an objection.
Okay. Senator Deckard objects. Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 150 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means to be passed.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 150 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation. Excuse me. Please take the roll.
Yes.
Senator Deckard? No. My first no.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
But yes. You wear that well.
Senator Metzger?
Aye. I'm glad you didn't send this bill to revenue. Having received a constitutional majority, this bill has passed and will be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, this is Wednesday. Tomorrow we'll deal with some transportation issues, and then Friday, you know, we will be at Milwaukee High School, which is going to be a very interesting meeting.
Anyone need a map?
Anybody need a map for Milwaukee High School?
I'll take one.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chair, my committee administrator said that we only have 8 more meetings left before we have to finish hearing Senate bills.
Yeah, so that's all those people in TV land who keep saying, well, can we wait another week? Well, you can, because one of those days I'm going to say there is no other week, and it's over. So just fair warning. All right, we're adjourned.